You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
In this episode of Wicked Horror Show, we're joined by two awesome special guests. First off, you know him from movies like The Hills Have Eyes, Weird Science, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Devil's Rejects, and the upcoming Death House. We're joined by Michael Berryman. Up next, we have filmmaker Jeremiah Kipp. We had the pleasure of meeting Jeremiah up at the Buffalo Dreams Fantastic Film Festival, where he was showing his movie Slapface. We loved it. We asked him to come on the show. And of course, if you like what you hear, head over to facebook.com/thedorkening every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a live show where you can interact with our guests, interact with us, and you're listening to us via the Dorkening Podcast Network. Head over to dorkening.com to check out all the other shows on the network. And whatever means you're listening to us on, please give us a like, subscribe, and leave us a review. But first, enjoy the show.
We are now live. This is going to be an awesome show. The man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Michael Berryman joining us today. Really quick, we have Kevin.
What's up, everybody?
Wolfie.
Hello, everybody.
Tony.
What's going on, people?
And the man of the hour, Mr. Michael Berryman. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Good evening. Good evening from California. Right back at you.
Nice. So we're more than happy to have you on. I know we've got a lot of fans here. And if anyone out there has had the opportunity to meet Michael, they know how much of a nice guy he is in person. So if you see that he's going to be at a local convention in your area, don't hesitate to go up, get an autograph. He's just fantastic, super nice guy. Every time I've met you, it's been great. So we appreciate that you're coming out and talking to us today, Michael.
Yeah, this is one of the big ones for me. I mean,
yeah, so yeah. We're big fans. So I know there's a few things we definitely want to touch on. I know time's a little limited today. You're in some of our favorite movies, and it really ranges from, you know, the horror down to like drama. You know, you have a pretty good range there of just awesome content. I know Wolfie had a movie that he wanted to bring up, and he had a few questions about Wolfie.
Yeah, one of your first movies, if not your first movie, was Doc Savage. Doc Savage, Man of Bronze. That's what it was. Can you talk a little bit about how you got the part for that?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. Yes, I was back in Los Angeles in Santa Monica, my hometown, after I left college, and I had a little gift shop, kind of an arty-farty store. You know, local artists in Venice Beach would, you know, hang their stuff on the wall. And we were just kind of hanging out for about 6 months before we closed our doors. But my neighbor had an antique store that was owned by the husband and wife. The husband was actually the son of George Powell. So I got to meet George Powell one night. He was at the store, and he walked up to me, and he said very nicely, he goes, "Are you an actor?" And I go, "No, I'm not. I'm why do you ask?" And he says, "Well, you have an interesting look, and I'm casting for a movie called Doc Savage." And I had read the books when I was a kid, and you know, they were great, great escape, little novels. And he said, "Yeah, I want to do The Man of Bronze, and I think you would fit the role for the coroner that did the autopsy on Doc Savage's father, and you get to reveal the mystery illness, et cetera." And I go, "Well, that sounds like fun." I said, "But, you know, I'm not really an actor. I'm actually getting ready to homestead in Alaska. I want to, you know, maybe be a nature photographer." And he said, "Well, here's my card." And he hands me this card, and it said Warner Brothers Studio. And just by looking at the card and seeing his name again, I became like kind of a fan geek. And I said, "Wow, you did The War of the Worlds and The Time Machine and The Journey to the Center of the Earth. Those are some of my favorite movies." And he just said, he smiled, and he said, "Well, thank you." He said, "Just, you know, call my office, and we'll have a meeting." So I did, and about 2 weeks went by, and I got to work at the Harold Lloyd Estate and deliver the the autopsy information to Ron Ely, who was playing Doc Savage. And it was a wonderful, very campy, but well-produced film. Matter of fact, I understand this, that all of George Pal's films are being re-released in a, I guess it would be a producer's special edition. So if your fans or listeners aren't familiar with George Pal's work, I highly recommend him because he was really, really cutting edge, a super nice guy.
Very cool.
Yeah, I actually am a huge fan of George Pal's. The one you didn't mention was When Worlds Collide.
Oh, yes, yes.
The other thing is that I just want, this is more like a confirmation. I've always heard the rumor that it was because of Doc Savage that you got the role in The Hills Have Eyes, that Wes Craven discovered you from that movie.
I think that's true. I think Wes saw George's movie and well, he was aware of me, so to speak, but you know, he got a phone call from my agent, who was a gentleman I caught. I had to have an agent when I had to have the meeting with Michael Douglas and Saul Zantz and Milos for Cuckoo's Nest. So that being said, I need my glasses. That being said, it was just a matter of time before somebody would give us a call. For instance, you know, Wes Craven. Yeah,
that's awesome. I mean, you met George Pal. You got to work with him. You got to work with Wes Craven. You worked with a lot of great directors, including Harrison Smith. And I know Kevin wants to talk to you about that. So go
yeah,
ahead,
so we've I don't know if you've had a chance to see Death House yet, but can you maybe talk a little bit about your experience making Death House with Harrison Smith?
Sure, I'd be delighted. I have not seen it yet. That's true. Hang on just a second.
Yep.
I haven't seen the entire film yet. Not at all. I enjoyed working with my friends, you know, Bill Moseley and Kane Hodder and the rest of the gang. So it was kind of like a family reunion, so to speak, you know.
Yeah, we've seen it a couple times. I know they had a premiere of it at a convention that we were at in Massachusetts over the summer, and it's different. I mean, it's different than what a lot of people I think are expecting, which I think is a good thing. And mm-hmm. some really great acting. I think Kane is extremely strong in this one. Like, he's just very powerful and just awesome. And Harrison actually had a question that he wanted us to ask. He said, ask sure. Michael tonight about the day we were shooting on Death House and the entire block lost power and how we overcame it. Do you remember that?
Okay, run that by me again.
I guess it was a day that you guys were shooting on Death House and the entire block lost power.
Oh, I don't know how they overcame the power outage, to be quite honest. I don't really remember. You?
So, Harrison, your question failed.
That's okay. We've had Harrison on a bunch of times, so we'll ask him again.
Yeah.
But Harrison texted me, you know, right before the show and wanted me to ask you that. But I have to say, you know, haven't seen the movie so many times. I cannot wait to see Michael in the sequels. Not giving anything away, but, I mean, your portrayal of one of the five evils, right?
Yep.
That's correct. I had a very interesting appendage on my arm, and it was a very, very important scene. Actually, the highlight for me of on Death House was to see Kane Hodder be in the situation that he was in when, you know, he thinks he's going to be releasing the five evils and he's going to, like, get brownie points for that or you know, get an upgrade or it would be a good thing. And there's a situation where, you know, we the five evils, we let him know that he was been used and he been a pawn, and that you know, he is not at the important. What he did was only helping us, and it was not helping him. So he had a very dramatic moment, which I was really keen on his facial expressions and how he played it as an actor, an artist, and it was a great moment for him. That's I really want to see the film because that particular moment I thought was I highlighted the depth that Kane has. He's not just a brilliant, safe stunt coordinator and a bad guy, but he has a lot of emotional depth to the roles that he takes on. He and I had, I think it was Ed Dean, the butcher of Plainsfield, where Kane and I are in the truck and we're disposing of some of the bodies that he's, been accumulating. And there's a great scene where we're driving up to the point where we get out of the truck and he kills me with a shovel. But before that point, we stop and we have a conversation. And my dialogue is to set up the scene where he has a crisis. He has to make a decision, as a character, and as a very emotionally charged moment. So, all in all, I just hope that Kane gets more roles that are in a more dramatic vein because he totally is on the mark within those moments.
Yeah, I agree. The that scene, I know exactly the scene you're talking about in Death House, and it was very. I was very proud of Kane because, a lot of the movies I've seen him, I haven't seen the Ed Gein one. Now I'm going to have to track that one down because
I've actually seen that one.
Okay. Yeah. I was very impressed with his performance and I've told him that a few times at conventions and, really I was very impressed because you usually don't see that side of him. So it was great. Definitely. It's one that we can't wait for. I know, but, sorry, Leo.
Yeah, I just wanted to butt in real quick. Want to let everybody know this is going to be a shorter show. We're going to be cutting it in roughly about 7 minutes. A bunch of people in the chat room just want to say everybody's loving Michael Berryman, Robert Sandage. I hope to the opportunity to meet you and R.A. R.A. is going to be on soon, and actually Kane's going to be on next month as well. But Michael, you also wanted to touch on Z Nation. So you're going to be coming back for some episodes for Z Nation?
Oh, that's right. There's a new character. His name is the founder. And Murphy's been hanging out in a place called Zona, which is everything's wonderful. There's no Z's there. He's big man on campus because his blood and actually my blood, I'm the founder, created the vaccine to stop the zombie virus from spreading. And then things start to go haywire. And in the first episode of season 4, which is the new season of Z Nation, it's established that Warren is coming out of a coma, and she has, there's something called the reset. And there'll be more more information about what that means, but it's kind of a parallel to just like the good science fiction stories that we were talking about, like what George Pell had done. Science fiction and Z Nation is science fiction. It can be a cautionary signpost up ahead, so to speak, for society. So that added meat on the bone to me as an artist is always very much appreciated, and that's what we're looking for. And again, that's that's what Kane Hodder shows in those two performances that we mentioned. The Friday nights Sci-Fi Channel Z Nation. I went back to Spokane a second time a few weeks ago to film some more scenes. So. I think we'll be, they haven't killed me off. I'm still alive, which is a good thing.
Awesome. Can't wait to see you.
So I'm kind of curious. I mean, you've been making movies for well over 40 years now. And like Kevin said earlier, a lot of them, great movies, dramas, horror, sci-fi, whatever. What's the one movie you have the fondest memories making?
Well, the fondest, of course, is Cuckoo's Nest, because I worked 127 days and I learned what the camera does, and I learned what all the people on the set do, and how an actor that understands that can benefit the production and get your day's work done. And to just watch people like Jack Nicholson and Brad Dourif and others emulate and become the role, it's just a delight. I would have to say that, Weird Science was delightful. There's so many roles. Even the music videos, Motley Crue, Smoking in the Boys' Room, a total treat. Sometimes you get a really, really cool part, like when I got to be in The X-Files on Season 3, Revelations, where I start off as being possibly the bad guy. I am actually a guardian angel and die in defense of saving a young boy from, being destroyed by, a devil. To play against type, again, is always appreciated, because we all get typecast one way or another. I'm happy to hear that, Kane is getting the roles that he so richly deserves. But I would say Cuckoo's Nest, Highway to Heaven, X-Files, even Star Trek was a hoot. But every role I take on, I give it its own special, what it deserves. And there's a doctor in Arkansas named Jesse Burke who's made a couple of shorts. There's one called One Please. You can Google it. I'm the creepy ice cream man that comes to suburbia and your children purchase an ice cream for me. The only problem is that it requires one of your parents' fingers. But it's silent. It's just brilliantly done. There's a lot of independent films coming out that I'm getting involved in. And that means that we have generations of new storytellers and filmmakers that are very, very talented. And, the more the better. There's a company called the Alamo Draft House. They're popping up all over the country. They have a couple multi-screens, and they also have good brew. Choose your brewery, excellent food, and they have film festivals that are just so worth going to. You can really see a wide range of creativity. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of great independent movie makers out there, and that's where we're seeing all the originality nowadays is with the independent guys. And I am very jealous that there is no Alamo Draft House in my area, for sure, because I always see people posting about it, and it looks like such a good time. And I'm like, if there was one in my area, I would live there. I would just, I would have to pay rent.
I hear you.
So we just have a couple minutes left. Tony, if you want to grab that question from Facebook, and while you read that and prep for that, Mr. Berryman, Michael, one of the previous questions, somebody wanted to, they're very eager to meet you. Where can people find you? I know you go to conventions. We met you at, I believe, Monster Mania in New Jersey. So what are the next couple conventions you're going to be covering?
Well, I just finished doing Rockula. That was last week. The next show I have is going to be the Salem Horror Fest in Massachusetts, the 24th through 26th of November, the Salem Horror Fest. And let's see what else I got. I'm shooting a little film called Midnight Devil from Texas, first week in December. But Salem Horror Fest is the next one. And then after that, there'll be a film festival in Catoosa County Film Festival in Tennessee. That's the first week in December.
Well, I think
we're that sounds like a blast.
I saw Kevin's
eyes light up when he said Salem Horror Fest. It's like, what?
Because I'm in central Massachusetts, so I might have to step up there for sure.
Down. Yeah, Salem Horror Fest, you betcha.
Nice.
I didn't even know it was happening. I'm so out of the loop. It's not even funny.
There are many loops.
And Tony,
yeah, I'm not I don't know if it's my Facebook or not, but I'm not seeing a question. I don't know if it flew by or
we'll finish up on this. Brad Rusk is asking, Michael, were there any extra scenes or footage that were cut from Devil's Rejects that were cut out?
There were some extended sewage when we were in the house, like when I'm vacuuming and I do the Princess Leia line. There's some footage there. I can't think of any particular major scene that was not depicted in the final cut. The whole chicken thing was kind of odd because it wasn't supposed to go down that path. But the gentleman who was selling the chickens, evidently a stand-up comedian, and he was pretty happy to have the camera on, so he just extended the scene to the point where Ken Foree and I are just standing there like going, what? And then he says what he says about the chickens, and so he left me no option but to just be angry clean on. So there's a little dialogue that that got cut out. I think it was something on the lines of, I think I was going to cut his liver out and saute it with some onions and red wine. And Ken goes, yeah, that sounds great. You know? But again, that goes back to, you know, being a professional. You come to work prepared, you hit your mark, you show up on time, you give the director what he wants and what she wants. And then sometimes you'll have a take where they say, expand on it. You know, this is a take just for you to have some fun. And that's what I like to call family, you know, working with everybody's important, from the wardrobe to hair and makeup to the set builders to the live sound. I love live sound. If you're a filmmaker, you want to get live sound, so really, really focus on that. And I also recommend read-throughs and rehearsals with camera if you have the time to do that with your for your major scenes. It's so, so helpful. But every minute costs you a few pennies, and the more familiar you are, I recommend having a dinner with your cast and director and producer and do a read-through so everybody gets kind of warm and fuzzy and get a little bit of a feel for who's playing what. And that's simple stuff like that really pays dividends.
Awesome. Well, I know your time is limited tonight, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you check out Michael Berryman upcoming episodes of Z Nation and also Death House in January. We're coming up close.
Awesome.
And it was an absolute honor, sir. Thank you.
And also check out that George Powell producer set that's coming out. I mean, again, like Michael said, he made a lot of really cool movies, including Doc Savage, Man of Bronze.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. George was way, way ahead of his time, and it was an honor to have worked with him. And being George Powell always asked me, he said, if anybody ever asked you how you got started, you say this. You say, this is Michael Berryman, and I'm telling you, I was discovered by George Powell, and that makes him mad. Yeah. He's upstairs smiling right now.
Awesome. And also make sure you, if you're in the Salem area, Salem, Massachusetts, you can catch Michael there on the 24th and 5th. And thank you so much, sir. Make sure you join us at 10 p.m. tonight. We're going to be live again with the people from the movie Sightings. So we're going to be talking about that shortly. Thank you, sir, and have a most awesome evening.
You do the same. All the best to look at. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night.
See you.
Okay, I don't know how to hang up. okay, so I believe Michael hung up there, which is good because I lost a control panel in all the busyness here. But we're going to be getting live or getting ready for the next
live. We're going to be getting live.
Getting live.
So that was Michael Berryman. Make sure you check out Death House coming in January 19th, I believe. And also Salem, Massachusetts. He's going to be at the Salem Horror Festival, or Horror Convention.
Horror Fest.
Did you already look it up?
I did not.
I'm looking it up because I didn't even know it was there.
Okay. and also, Michael said he's going to be in upcoming episodes of Z Nation, which sounds very exciting. I know Wolfie watches that show. So this was a lot of fun. We're going live again, like I said, at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. With the people from the movie Sightings, which is out on VOD today. Yeah, it's going to be fun. We'll catch you guys later. Bye. Okay, here we are. We're here with Kevin.
What's up, everybody?
Wolfman.
Oh, everybody.
Yo, yo.
Hey, everyone. our very, very special guest of the evening, Mr. Jeremiah Kipp. Hello, sir. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's awesome. We get to meet you up at Buffalo Dreams. We got to see your short film, Slapface, which, you know, it's a short film in a lot of ways. Like, you know, it's obviously a short film, like time-wise, but it's at least so many open questions and so many like thoughts, you know, like where can this go and where did this start kind of deal. So for the people that haven't seen Slapface, you want to just explain it to the listeners?
Sure. Yeah, it is a proof of concept for a feature film. So there is a larger version of the story, but essentially it's E.T. with teeth. So it's a little boy who lost his mother, and in the local folklore of the town, there's a monster. And I know when I was a kid growing up in Rhode Island, I grew up where there were like three houses and there were very, very deep woods. And I liked to imagine that there were monsters out in the woods that could potentially be my friends. Maybe some of that had to do with Sesame Street, where Sesame Street had all these very friendly monsters. But I think also it was that when I was a kid, I watched a lot of horror films, and I was always fascinated by the monster because the monster was something other and something beyond and something more powerful. So as we gradually learn about this kid, the kid has a troubled home life with a father that doesn't know how to deal with him and can only express love through these intensely violent rituals. So the kid seeks out the friendship of a monster, and things quickly spin out of control from there. Even in the short film, there's the threat that things will spin dangerously out of control. And in the feature-length version, the shit really hits the fan.
Nice. That's awesome. So, yeah, we really enjoyed it when we saw it in Buffalo Dreams, and it was good to see it again because we saw a lot. We saw so much stuff that weekend, you know, that we were there. But it's, you know, like watching it again, I was just like, wow, yeah, I really did like this, you know. And one of our other guys that actually was supposed to be on, but he had to leave. He was very impressed with the look and the feel of it. You know, you're able to pull off quite a bit in that short amount of time. I just want to go around the room maybe because I know, you know, Leo and I obviously really enjoyed it because we saw it in Buffalo. What did you guys think of it, Wolfie and Yo-Yo? Wolfie?
Well, I'm always, when it comes to shorts, I'm always impressed at how much they can get out in such a little time. I mean, it's kind of like when Vine was around or something like that. You know, you have to do like a 30-second review and get everything out there. It's amazing that you can get as much out there in 8 minutes.
Yeah,
I'm with Tony. It's like the look of this movie is great. It's another thing. It's like, the technology is so there nowadays that anyone that makes a movie can almost make it look like a $1 million movie if they know what they're doing with the technology.
Yeah, I think it's like the person who knows what they're doing is actually the person that can do a good job. Like if you had the set of Bobby Flay steak knives, you wouldn't necessarily be able to cook as well as Bobby Flay. But if you had like the crappy knives and Bobby Flay, then Bobby Flay would cook an amazing, the crappy, crappy knives. So I think for me, it comes down to the people that you're working with and the talent of the people that you're working with. We had a great director of photography named Dominic Sedilli. He's my very old friend. We've known each other for over 10 years. And Dom was actually the one who said to me, hey, let's make a short film based on your feature. I think he said five grand. I've got $5,000. Let's go make a movie. And I was like, great, let's go. And he said, well, why don't we do a little crowdfunding just to increase the pot? And I was like, great, let's do it. Not thinking that the crowdfunding would go well at all. But we made our budget through crowdfunding. And then Dom was like, that's great. Because I didn't have $5,000 at all. I had nothing. You know? And it taught me a really good lesson, which is that it's more important to start and pick a date and say, we're going to shoot in February. And we cashed in a lot of favors. Dominic and I have worked in the film business for many, many years. So He had his team of people. I had my team of people. We brought in, we cashed in a lot of favors and called on a lot of friends to help us out. But yeah, the look of the film is not just Dominic's red camera. You know, the red camera is a useful tool in the toolbox, but really it's his aesthetic eye. He has a great eye for visuals, and we collaborated together, and we really trust each other. We've shot countless movies together, so, and we both believe in visual storytelling, and pictures tell the story, so that might account for some of the economy of the storytelling, but I couldn't have done it without Dominic Fazzilli.
Yeah, it just really, really looks great. Yeah, and the, like you said, you know, you guys have both said, like, we, like, I personally know filmmakers that have really top-notch cameras, but they're basically, their movies look like it's done on a camcorder because they're not using it correctly, you know? So it's, I mean, it's, when you see people with actual talent, like you said, you've been in the industry for a while, looking at your IMDb, you've been involved in a lot of productions, but as far as directing goes, you've done a lot of shorts. Now, you haven't done a full length, you haven't directed a full feature yet, right?
Not true. I've done five of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, The Sadist is on Amazon Prime. That's the feature I did with Tom Savini as a killer in the woods. The second one is finished, but or like it's picture locked, but hasn't been sound designed or color corrected. That's called Teresa and Allison, produced by Charles D. Lincoln, the son of Fred Lincoln from Last House on the Left. Black Wake is the third one, and we're doing the sound mix today after we finish this interview. That's a H.P. Lovecraft inspired monster movie with elder gods busting up out of the ground. It's a movie. Eric Roberts. And then the fourth one was a drama that I shot out in the Hamptons in September that's playing in festivals right now. And the fifth one is a Chinese Hong Kong action movie made for Chinese Netflix called Broken Badges. And that one is circulating in China right now. So five features. But I have what I haven't, and they were all work for hire. They were all jobs. So they hired me to film, and then I did it. And then the producers moved on to complete it in whatever stage they were in and allowed me to participate in post and however much they wanted me to. Or but I have yet to do that sort of personal project that would be like the one that you would say is like my baby. But I have done that with short films. So with features, I've done them, but they were all assignments. And like they were assignments to various degrees of, I learned a lot from all of them and I enjoyed them all to various degrees. But the next thing that I want to do is do a feature that you can say is your own. You know, it's like, that's mine. Like George Romero with Night of the Living Dead, or Toby Hooper with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they could really say those were my films, not just a job.
Right. That's awesome. Yeah. Yo, do you have any thoughts on Slapface?
Well, I have to echo the fact that like it was beautifully shot.
Thank you.
And I'm really happy to hear that it's like a full feature length coming soon, hopefully, because it left me wondering what, you know, where did this person come from, the background behind everything? And I thought it was going to end in a different way than it did. And knowing that, well, one thing, it didn't end that way, and that we're going to get some, you know, full feature length up. Well, now definitely getting me more interested in seeing it now. Yeah. It's still good.
Yeah,
it's so definitely exciting that, like, the camera's jumping off of the
the camera's excited as I am.
Yeah.
Excited. Yeah, I hope so too. You know, it's certainly it's in the cards to do a full length version where we can expand on it and have more stuff happen within the story.
That is awesome.
Sorry, go ahead, Wolfie.
I was gonna say, so I know that a lot of the independent filmmakers, you know, that make like feature length films, they'll shoot them in like 3 weeks.
Right.
This is 8 minutes. I mean, how long did it take to film this and get the story you wanted?
2.5 days. I mean, we had to go in and do it. It would have been 2 days, but typical indie film, like we had technical issues for the first half of day one. So like the first half of day one, we got like three shots done because we were using something called the Movi, which is in layman's terms, I guess you could call it a new form of Steadicam. That's not exactly what it is, but it's on a gimbal. Anyway, it just wasn't working, you know? So we had a monster and a little boy and a location and a crew of like 20 people standing around waiting for the technology to work. And that was really, that will test your mettle. And then the second half of the day, we shot some stuff. And then the second day we shot some stuff. And then we owed a half day that we did a week later. So yeah, 2.5 days altogether. But you know, as polished as it looks, it was an indie production. And in indie land, if something goes wrong, then you're stuck. You know, it's like you have to patch it together with, it's like you're building a house out of chewing gum and cardboard. But we just, you know, like the ingenuity of the people on our team, we were able to pull it together. But yeah, 2.5 days, that was all.
Wow.
So were you happy with the, I mean, after all the, you know, screw ups you had to deal with, were you happy with the overall story that you got out of it?
I was, but you know, it was an interesting process for me because, like I said, most of the stuff that I do is work for hire. So often when I'm thinking about my work in production and in post, I think a lot about the audience and how we're communicating the story to the audience. And with Slapface, I did the same thing. I mean, I did think about how the pictures are telling the story to the audience. But while we were in post, I was like, my gosh, this story is so so personal to me. You know, I know I love it, but I was like, man, I don't know if anybody else is going to like this movie. And I genuinely wasn't sure. You know, it's like, I know that I like it. And Dominic and I, when we're cutting it, it's like, we know that we like it. But then, you know, you never know. I mean, you know, once you put it in front of an audience, it doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to them. And I think that's really the test of filmmaking is how does the audience respond to the movie? And when the audience is gasping and wincing and nervous for the kid, then I think we've succeeded. But it was very hard to tell in post. You know, it was one of those things where I was like, you know, chewing on my fingernails up until the last second, being like, man, I hope this works for people. And if not, then it was an interesting experiment in personal storytelling.
Yeah. So you've been doing the film festival circuit for a while with this, right? You've done a few of them.
I guess we played like 15 or 16 festivals now, something like that. We're in the middle of, I mean, I'd say we're still in the first, if we're to go for like a whole year, we're probably in the first quarter of that year that we're, you know, that we're doing the festival thing.
Nice.
So yeah, a couple months we've been doing it. And thus far it's been really enjoyable. I've loved sharing it with audiences. I've really enjoyed doing the Q&As afterwards where people ask incredibly thoughtful, smart questions. I've enjoyed the way that it's been programmed. I'm always curious, like what it's paired with. And it's been great talking about the movie with programmers and audiences and other filmmakers. So far the festival journey has been really exciting, really enjoyable.
Cool. Well, so obviously that's the best way to see this movie right now. The short film is track down a local, you know, if you have a local film festival that you see that it's playing at. You know, I would definitely recommend it. I know Leah would definitely recommend it. One thing that I wanted to say, too, is that there's only three cast members in this movie, but they were all great. Like Joshua Kaufman plays the boy, and he was awesome. We got to talk to him a little bit up in Buffalo as well. We had Nick Gregory is the father.
Yeah, Nick Gregory, wonderful actor. Yeah, Nick, I directed him in the Hamptons feature I did in September. And Nick is... Well, first of all, we're very good friends and we loved working together. Nick is a really intense guy. You know, he feels things incredibly fully. And when he plays a character, he always bases it on somebody that he knows. You know, so like when we did our feature together, he based the character on somebody that he knows very intimately, a very somebody who's very close to him in his life. And he's like, I'm going to play that person. And when we did Slapface, he was playing, he based his character on somebody that he knew whose wife had been like run over. She was just like went out to the road and got hit by a car. And it totally shattered the guy's life. And the guy had no idea how to deal with his children after that. So Nick entirely based the character on somebody that he knows personally, who was going through an intensely difficult time. And that's just how Nick approaches his work. He approaches it all very truthfully. I should also say that when we rehearsed the slapping game that the father and son play, you know, there's a bit in the film where the father is punishing the kid by doing this ritualized game where they slap each other in the face. And Nick and Joshua were incredibly good about making it play very dangerous and seem very dangerous. But in fact, it was safety first, you know, which is as it should always be in movies. The actors themselves were really trying to protect each other, trying to keep each other completely safe, so that you are using these techniques of like if this is their head and they're swinging, it's like pop, you know, but you can't tell how far away my hand is from my fist right now. But if my fist reacts, you know, it looks like I just, you know, it looks like there was a hit there. And then we had somebody on set actually clapping for the contact so that they would know where it was hit. And then in sound design, we changed it up. But they were wonderful about keeping each other safe during very dangerous circumstances, which I think all horror movies and action movies should do. Rehearse it so that it looks incredibly dangerous and that the actors can play it as being incredibly dangerous. But then a human life and human safety is far more important than any movie ever made. Blade Runner is my favorite movie, but you know, it's not as important as Harrison Ford being safe when they're doing the rooftop scene. So yeah, that was Nick and Joshua, two remarkable actors, and they really committed to that scene beautifully.
It's awesome.
So,
sorry, go ahead, Leo.
Well, I was going to ask more of a technical or promotional question. So you talked about doing a crowdfunding. What was your experience with that? Was this your first crowdfunding experience? And what did you do for promotion? And how much did you raise?
It wasn't my first. I can't remember which one was my first. It may have been with Rob Dimension. We made a horror film called Baggage. And Rob is an incredibly savvy guy. And I learned a lot about how to create working with Rob. So his was this really dark movie. Rob has a built-in audience through his time in the horror community and through the wrestling community. And he's just he's an amazing populist guy. And Baggage is a wonderful film that's available on YouTube. It's a 15-minute short, kind of a weird day in the life that is it's in black and white. It's kind of in the style of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, but way more perverse and way more macabre. It's like Alfred Hitchcock Presents that goes off the deep end. But I learned a lot about doing crowdfunding then. And then there were other projects I did that did crowdfunding as well. There was a short called Painkiller. It was kind of Clive Barker, like, you know, there's a little bit of dangerous pain and pleasure element to that story. So by the time we did the crowdfunding for Slapface, we had a pretty good idea of how to create the video and how to use social media as a way to get the word out and sharing it with people that we knew, we thought might be interested in contributing to this film. So we just went out, you know, so we made the video and we shared it with our community. And I think we raised $6,000 or $7,000, somewhere around there. And you know, the process of crowdfunding to me is always a little, I don't love it. You know, I don't love crowdfunding just because it, you know, it's like I'd rather make the thing than sell, like, than then pitch the thing. So, but you know, inevitably you have to present your ideas to somebody, you know, with, no matter if you're being interviewed for a work for hire job, or if you're pitching to an executive, or if you're trying to appeal to a producer, or you're crowdfunding, you're doing the same thing, which is expressing why the story needs to be told right now, who the people are that are telling the story, what is the story, what are we going to do with it when we're done with it, and why. And you have to convey all that stuff in a minute and a half or 2 minutes. One of the things I like to do with these crowdfunding videos, just to make it a more creative experience, is in addition to the talking head that's saying all that stuff, you know, we always go out and do a little test shoot. You know, so we did that for Baggage, we did it for Painkiller, we did it for Slapface. You know, we just went out with a camera, and for Slapface, we just went out with Josh Kaufman, and we, you know, we found this location with these ruined buildings, and we just had him walking around looking for the monster. And then we added some concept art that our special effects artist Beatrice Sniper had done of the monster. So that's how we did it with Beatrice, was we started on paper, and she went through like maybe 30 or 40 designs until we settled on the one that we liked. And then we shared a lot of her drawings and sketches in the crowdfunding video, including the final. And it was very, 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 very close to what the monster ultimately looked like. But shooting some actual like test footage or actual footage from the movie or from the story always makes it feel like, in addition to saying like what we want to do, we're actually showing the audience our intentions. We're showing them this is a taste or sample of like what we're going to do.
Yeah,
I think that helps so that people don't wonder like, what it's going to look like.
It's more of like the show that you have the actual, like, sometimes, I mean, I've backed some stuff on crowdfunding that I've never seen anything from, you know, so it's right. Like, oh, whatever happened with that? Like, you know, and at the same time too, this show is like, okay, you have the ability to do this. It's not just an idea that we're funding. It's the talent behind it. And, you know, you have a great idea, you know, and we've dealt with a lot of independent filmmakers that hate crowdfunding, and some of them, like, it's been able to let them survive. You know, there's some filmmakers that we are, you know, have become friends with over the show, like through the show. It's like, okay, if we don't meet this goal, we're not going to be able to continue because, you know, what we're looking to do, we just can't do it on our own kind of deal. You know, it's so tough.
Right. They're
able to create their own work that way. They don't have to answer to anybody. Like, there's a great filmmaker out in Indiana named Scott Shermer.
Oh yeah.
I really love.
Yeah.
That's exactly who we're talking about, actually. Yeah. That's exactly who I was referencing when I said that with Abandoned Motion Pictures. Yeah.
Fantastic movie. I think he's as good as George Romero was back in the late 60s. I think he's an important filmmaker. Mm-hmm. I really love his work. I thought Plank Face was fantastic.
Yep.
And but he's able to pre-sell these movies, you know, through their audience. You know, it's like, it's really impressive. He's able to do them really, really cheaply and really, really well. I'm endlessly impressed by Scott. I really like him too. Whenever I see him at a convention or at a festival, I always want to hang out and talk to him just because I think he's a great director. But more than anything else, he's done a great job of doing it his way, on his terms, and that's that. You know, which is completely different than the way I've gone about it, which is to be essentially a work for hire director. So my budgets might be a little bigger than his, but on my features, I've had way less personal freedom than he's had. And he's been able to do what, like 5 or 6 of them now that are like his movies. I think it's really amazing.
Yeah. They're even doing, because I know like the guy who does a lot of his cinematography and stuff. Was it Brian
K. Williams.
Yeah. Brian K. Williams. Put out Space Babes, and they funded that through social media. And like, I mean, I think that's the way to go for a lot of independent filmmakers, because a lot of them are out there being like, hey, buy my movie, you know, whatever. But I don't know. I mean, they've lucked out. I mean, I guess lucked out, because found the movie that Scott did a while back, had such a huge like underground success that I think that helped quite a bit. But I don't know, he kind of got bit with that too, but I don't know. It's a good way to go.
I don't know if they've lucked out. I think they've made their own luck. You know, they've created their own luck. You know, they've created a system where they're able to follow through on what they want to do. It's great. I wish that more people would follow that role model. And it would take, and they're also doing a great thing, which is taking the middleman out of it entirely. They're not going to get ripped off by some fly-by-night distributor.
Right.
They're just going to take all the money and put it in their own pocket or into the next project, which is really great. And it allows them to build a body of work, which is
fantastic. Yeah. I think that's what happened with Found. I think they did get ripped off with a distributor through that. And I think that's kind of what soured him towards that, you know, going forward.
Yeah. That's a shame. And,
yeah, we've heard.
Convinced that movie is going to continue to get out there and inspire people. It's one of those movies that if there's any justice in this world, it'll get dusted off 20 years from now. And people will look back on it as this cult indie horror classic, which I think it is.
Yeah, so it's awesome. So is there a website anywhere where people can maybe find out where Slapface is playing, or how do people find out where they can see this?
Well, I have a website, kipfilms.com. That's my last name, kipfilms, F-I-L-M-S.com. And then, you know, but I would also encourage people to find me on Facebook. I accept a lot of friend requests. I'm not a snob about it. But I frequently on social media let people know where the films are playing and what's going on and what I'm working on next. So when people follow my Facebook page, it allows them to A, see what I'm working on, B, see where it's showing, and then C, see what I really care about, which is indie film, supporting other filmmakers. So I talk about Scott Shermer a lot on my Facebook page and other directors that I admire, other actors that I admire. I try to pay it forward and publicize. I'm not a publicist, but I like sharing with the people who follow me the stuff that I care about and how to direct them to the stuff that I care about. So kipfilms.com is the website where they can see a lot of my work. And Facebook is where I spend, I post at least one thing every day that's either related to my work or the stuff that I really care about.
Very cool. So that's awesome. So yeah, I mean, we highly recommend Slapface. It's got really good feel to it. It's really well made, and I know I'm looking forward to it. And it sounds like the other guys are looking forward to hopefully a full
length. Seeing some more. Yeah.
Fingers crossed that everything happens. That'd be awesome.
On the festival circuit.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, it'd be cool to go back up to Buffalo and be able to see the full length Slapface at some point.
That'd be awesome.
I would love.
That'd be great.
Well, Jeremiah, I want to thank you for joining us today. And if you want to learn more about Jeremiah, definitely check out the show notes, and we'll have all the links there for you to follow Jeremiah and where you can learn more about Slapface. And with that, we talked to Jeremiah where you can follow him. I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience, where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.